from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and retired boxer Mike Tyson is with us, promising to talk about everything, and that's what he does in his one-man show, from biting Evander Holyfield's ear to his prison time for rape charges. Nothing is off limits, is what he says. In the play, Mike Tyson, Undisputed Truth, directed by Spike Lee, is running for 3 nights in San Francisco at the Orpheum Theater. The show chronicles the former heavyweight champion's life, from his days being bullied as a kid in Brooklyn to his struggle with drugs and the death of his young daughter. Mike Tyson joins us in this segment of Forum.
How you doing, Mr. Krabs?
I'm doing okay. Good
to have you here. We're with the Krabster.
He is with the Krabster. And I'm with Iron Man, who's known by other than Iron Mike and Kid Dynamite and the baddest man in the planet. What a handle to have,
yeah,
on you.
What's that all about, huh?
I don't know. You know, let's talk about that, because I mentioned you before you came on that I had recently regards to you from Howard Schatz, who'd been on the show talking about his boxing book and had photographed you. And he said, here's a guy who was known for his brutishness, and you, and wanted to be vicious and said, I'll eat his children, about people you were fighting. And here are people like Howard Schatz and other people who know you who say, he's the sweetest man. He's a tender man. He's a kind man, you know. I mean, and there's a kind of warring image within you, in those two sides of you?
They have to be. You know, I figure in order to be the best fighter in the world, I had to be that particular individual. And in order to be what I want to be today, I have to be this individual. You know, if I want to be a committed parent to a relationship, do I want to be committed to my children? Do I want the best for them? Am I willing to sacrifice my feelings and my pride for just so they can have a better life? You know, and I had a really interesting life, so not necessarily say they're going to have a better life than mine. That's going to be hard to beat. But they're going to be able to enjoy life more than I ever can imagine.
You've had, for 46 years, one of the most up-and-down lives of anybody on record. I mean, that...
I have to agree, yes.
Yeah, and yet things have changed for you. I mean, third marriage seems to be about as solid a marriage as certainly you've ever had, and a very solid marriage.
100%. Yeah, I have to agree.
And she's in many ways responsible, Lakeisha Spicer or Malik Abdul Aziz, for putting on the show, isn't she?
No.
Did she write it?
Or? She wrote it, but she never thought of me doing it until I had explained to her that I think I can do this. We had went to a show called A Bronx Tale by Chaz Palminteri on stage. And when we went to the show, my wife really loved the movie because, you know, it was a black woman, a love interest. So she really was pumped about that. So we went to the play. The play was absolutely breathtaking. As he was speaking, this is what made it interesting. More so than his story. That's why I hope it's more so than my story, is that I grasped, I had all my hooks, emotionally, spiritually, physically, and he's on stage into every word he said. And that was the magic, more so than his story.
And then how'd you get Spike Lee involved in this?
This is interesting. We did, we got Adam Stuck. He was a producer for Men Down Under, Human Nature, those Australian acts, the Bee Gees. And he wanted to do a show. He made so many on television, so he found a friend in a hotel, the M Hotel that I work out in. He gave him a card. We got a show together. A gentleman that worked for Spike Lee had came and witnessed the show, expressed his feelings about it to Spike Lee. Spike Lee called me when I was in Poland shooting a commercial. He told me that he was in Brazil at the time, and he said, let's make it for Broadway. Let's do the show for Broadway. And he got involved with Jimmy Nylander from the Broadway fame, and we put it together, and it was sensational for 10 days.
Talking to Mike Tyson, there's been a whole new kind of turn of a career because of your being in Hangover. In fact, it's a big flap now, and I'd like to get your thoughts about this or get you to reflect for a moment on it, because you did go to prison for rape, and you were playing a rape victim in Special
Victims.
Yeah, but
I always maintain I was put in jail unjustly, and I did not rape anyone.
And what about the outrage then? That because people see you as a convicted rapist, and then you're playing a rapist, a rape victim in Special Victims Unit.
What people think about me is none of my business, and I'm just here to do a job. And I'm very objective about feelings of myself or other people, and I just want to get the job accomplished.
Well, since you've been with Custy Amato, you've been a professional. I mean, that's how you see yourself, isn't
yes,
it?
That,
I mean,
that is.
Now in the acting world, in the entertainment world,
yes,
just like
I do.
In the boxing world?
Yeah. 100%.
And, in fact, you've got a brother who lives out here in the West, and I know the two of you don't necessarily see a lot of each other, but love each other. You've said that publicly. He was always the guy who was kind of in, while you were the guy who felt out.
Well, we have different personalities, and he's just an awesome guy, and he's always been the shining horse of our family. And I've always, you know, I was a street guy. I got caught up in the streets. And the reason why is because I was bullied a lot. And I thought the guys that were bullying me were the coolest guys in the world because they bully people and nobody bullied them. And so I got involved with that crowd after one bully bullied me once too often and killed my pigeon. And I got into fighting and I beat him up, supposedly. But, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was flailing away. And I guess I won. So all the other bullies thought I was cool and started getting me to fight people. And this is where I became involved with a program about bullying because of that. You know, people that are victims become victimizers. And that's why people have to be careful. That's how these guys become these serial killers. These guys become these guys with these automatic weapons because it never leaves. I don't care how successful you are. Listen, I was heavyweight champion of the world twice. Over 10 successful, knocking guys out, beating everybody. I never forgot those guys that bullied me. You never forget that feeling. It's just so helpless. They could do whatever they want to you. You can't do nothing.
Never have forgotten your love for pigeons. It's still there, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's just that's the inner city culture. Not inner city, but underground culture, because everyone does do it from all race of life and class. So even all the royal families, it's just it's something that has to be in your soul. You have to just want to do it.
You have, because I've certainly read a lot about you through the years and followed your career, amazing career, and I know you have a great deal of regrets for things that have happened in the past, and you're putting it all out there in the show, which takes
no,
courage.
No, I don't have too many. I don't have no regrets. Not many, if I can think of any.
I'll think of one, though, that I think cascades over all the rest of them, and that is that your mother couldn't see you do what you've done and achieve what you achieved.
Yeah, that could be one, but that's something I couldn't handle. Anything, like, when I think of regrets, I think about things that I'm like, responsible for, things that I consciously should not have done.
Or even feel guilty for.
Yeah.
Nothing like with those motorists in Los Angeles?
Tell me about it.
Well, you went to jail for it, I think, didn't you?
When Los Angeles?
You got in a fight with a couple of motorists?
No, that was in D.C.
I'm sorry, in Washington,
D.C. Yeah. See, that was me. It's going through one of my unbalanced stays. I was on a bunch of medical stuff back then, my Prozac and Thorazine. I guess they kind of intertwined the wrong way. I was responding wrong. I don't know. I was messed up a lot on medication back then. I had issues.
Regret some of the drug usage, though?
I don't know. I really wish I regret my intimates with women. I just regret that, you know. I regret being around so many people, and I have my wife, and sometimes I don't feel special because I've been just I don't know, what's that word again? I played myself too thin. That's just my own psychological torture. You know, my wife thinks I'm great, but I'm like, God, she deserves more than me. Everybody's had me.
Wait, does she think you're great? I've read statements of hers for you. Yeah. You sound like a lucky man. And then there's Holyfield. I saw some pictures of the two of you in Chicago, and everything was buddy-buddy, and your arms around each other.
I'm very grateful for that. He's a really special guy, and I'm just, he's just a really good man. And I was just frustrated and mad he was getting the best of me.
And you're a vegan now?
Yes, yes.
And also went through a conversion to Islam when you were in prison, yeah?
Well, I was really pretty much, I was involved with Islam, but I just never really committed to it before I was in prison.
So what does a commitment mean now?
Just living my life the right way. You know, I all have my own salvation with Allah. And listen, I don't know if I'm a good Muslim. Maybe I don't pray all the time when it's time to pray. But I know I don't hurt anybody, and I love all of God's creations. And I just can't be a perfect Muslim, I guess. I wasn't a perfect Christian. So how am I going to be a perfect Muslim? I put the same emphasis and struggle into being a Christian as I do being a Muslim. And I still don't stand up to a par to it. I'm just hoping that God, when I die, He has mercy on my soul.
Well, you're clean and sober, right?
Yes, thank God.
Congratulations.
Thank God.
We're talking to Mike Tyson. And by the way, if you'd like to talk with him, he's got a show that's opening at the Orpheum. It's called Mike Tyson, Undisputed Truth, live on stage, directed by Spike Lee. And there will be only 3 performances tonight through March 2nd at 8 p.m. You can join us a number of ways. You can call us now at our toll-free number, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. The number to call, 866-733-6786.
Hey, Kraft.
And you can join us live.
You're a pretty mellow guy. You know what I mean? Like Charlie Rose type of guy. I thought you'd be a more Howard Stern guy. Talk about when I ran, when I came to my wife's
now,
house.
Where did you get that
come
impression?
On, came that when I came to my house. Let's talk about when I came to my wife's house, my ex-wife's house, and I
and
came
found
there.
Brad Pitt. I
yeah, and he
asked
showed
about
up.
That.
Come on, you got to ask some inciting stuff, man. You got to be some vice in your soul.
You not excited in this interview?
I love this.
Yeah, I
feel like I'm at a funeral. I'm watching grass grow. No, I'm teasing you.
All right, this Morabin, this Morabin interview continues on public radio. Let me say that you can join us by phone, 866-733-6786. We'll get to some gossip here, Mike. Don't worry. Email us, forum at kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have
for
right
tickets,
onto our...
FHNFF.com. Right. Or 888-746-1799.
Now, he's giving a plug for his show. Smart guy he is.
No, because I have problems with the F and the S. I keep it. F A S. F. I don't know. F H.
He used to bully you with that lisp, didn't he?
Yeah,
that
was part of the reason. The old proverbial lisp.
Hold off a second. Let me tell them how else they can join the program. You can also email us, forum at kqed.org, or you can post any questions or comments you have right onto our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. So you want to talk about catching Brad Pitt with Robin Givens?
Yeah, dude. So
make
one day,
me in a Howard Stern.
Okay, so one day I'm coming, before I go to my divorce lawyer's office to tell him how horrible my wife and her mother is and stuff, I decided to go by my wife's house and, you know, have a quickie. You know, because I saw her the night before. That's what we did. You know, even though we were divorced, we didn't want to be together, but we didn't want to stop having sex. So we were, you know, we had that, you know that exponent there. So I came there this one particular day. And, you know, as you know, she's not home. And as I leave the car, her car comes up. And you have no idea. They didn't even see me. She comes up with Brad Pitt. Because I'm thinking of one of her white girlfriends from that show, you know, the head of the class, right? But when the car gets closer, no. It's not one of her white girlfriends from the head of the class. It's probably some white guy that she's giving to. And, and of course, you know who it is.
But pretty boy, as you called him.
Oh, he was gorgeous. He was gorgeous. I was,
But you didn't want to... take him on and beat him up? And
no, that wouldn't have looked good if I would have went back after I had some kind of physical encounter with him. Then I go back to my divorce lawyer and say, hey, I just finished seeing Robin and I beat up her boyfriend. That's not going to come out right, huh? I'm not going to look good in that scenario.
Well, you didn't
no
look
way,
good.
Jose.
You didn't look good from that marriage either. I mean, because said you were abusive and she said you were sadistic, all kinds of things like that. And that's open in your show too, isn't it?
And that might have been true, but, you know, she was too. You know,
work both ways?
Yeah, pretty much so.
Well, let me find out what listeners want to say to you or ask you. And here's Jack. Jack, you're on. Yes.
What's up, Jack?
Hey, I'm so proud to be able to talk to you. I'm a pigeon flyer. And
what you fly, Jack? What you fly?
Oh, I fly Terniers and Del Bars. And,
oh, beautiful.
A bunch of things that I got from Mexico. And I just wanted to have you just talk a little bit about your love of birds and how it's helped you recover.
Hey, listen, right? I've been doing birds since I was like 9 years old. The first time I got involved with birds, these guys were bullying me. I was skipping school because people were bullying me. So I'm walking around the school to school come for lunch to come. I go eat lunch. And then when lunch is over, I walk around school till school is over. So these bullies came up to me, tried to pat my pocket for money. I didn't have money. They made me climb the fence, get some crates, throw crates to milk crates, and then they started marching me to this abandoned building. And it's 2-3 stories, and I don't know if these guys are going to kill me in the building. They make me climb to the roof. I don't know if they're going to throw me off. I'm just a kid. You know, they're 13, 15 kids, 15-year-olds, and I see a box, a roof with a coop with some birds in it. And I'm saying, whoa, this is awesome. And so they're trying to fly the birds. The birds are in awful condition, so when they try to fly, they land on somebody else's roof. So my job was to chase them off the roof. The birds were in horrible condition. So when school was over, I left. I didn't want to go to school again because it was going to bother me. So I came back to the guys that bullied me to make me run errands for them. They saw me. They started throwing bricks at me. You trying to steal my birds, you mother, this and this and that. And I said, no. I just want to know if you need any more help with the birds again today. And that's how I started flying birds.
What about the... you often hear, don't you? I mean, I don't know if you hear, but I often hear pigeons are so dirty and they're scavengers and, you know, get these pigeons away. People out there feeding pigeons, loving pigeons like you, but there are also people who find them kind of dirty and scavengers.
Well, that's why it's so awesome that we're all not the same people and think alike, because The reason that we think that is because we had no, we didn't know science investigation, no logical or rational investigation that anybody have died from pigeons. They may have got some feathers in their nose and sneezed a lot, but there's no record that somebody's died from some pigeon. You know, find the record.
Somebody looked that up on the internet while we're talking to Mike Tyson, and let me get another caller on here. And Jane, you're on. Good morning.
Hey, Michael. Long-time listener. Mike, I just want to tell you I've watched you for many years, and I want to briefly just make a comment and send you my good wishes. My daughter, I have many family members that are mentally ill. My daughter has been bipolar severely since the age of 4, diagnosed at 8. And I just want people to know that, you know, it's a real struggle, and that a lot of people think that when you're taking all these drugs, like my daughter did, Seroquel, lithium, Depakote, I could go on.
That's
and on.
Me. That's me.
It's got major, major side effects and sometimes cardiac problems, and it ain't a matter of, I mean, I use that word purposely, it just ain't a matter of just saying, take your meds. So I just want people to know that, you know, it's the hardest disease to treat. And people who are in it are really some of the bravest people I know. And I just want to make a suggestion, Mike. I found that with my daughter, she doesn't take a lot of responsibility. You know, she likes to blame things on other people. But I found that hypnotherapy really, really helps, calm people down that are anxious or have problems, you might want to check into hypnotherapy in general.
Well, what are you doing? I mean, you've been diagnosed as bipolar. What are you doing for it now?
Ma'am, I don't know. I'm not doing anything. I'm just living life on life terms. I don't want to...
No more medication.
No, I don't want to have a zombie swagger no more. You know, so I didn't want to feel like that. You're sitting around looking at Law and Order, getting fat. I said, I'd rather do cocaine than this. All right, so that's my best thinking. But what the lady was talking about, hypnosis, I've been
been
in hypnosis since I was 14, since I've been 13 years old, to my whole boxing, most of my boxing career. And that's just what Custom Auto believed in. And I believe that did help people. I believe I got too carried away with it, because when I used to be under my hypnosis state, I was always the ferocious, impregnable tiger, a ferocious villain. There's no man on this earth can beat me. If God was to have a son and his son was a fighter, he couldn't beat you. So this is what I'm going through when I'm on a hypnosis. And hypnosis work for the right people. Trust me, it does.
Why'd you get the tattoo?
Because I like it.
Good answer. Let me go to some comments here. Is Tyson going to tell us what Custom Auto was really like and the nature of their relationship? A lot of people think he exploited Tyson.
I don't think so. I think Tyson wanted to be exploited in that manner.
He was like a father to you, really, wasn't
Yes.
He?
When I first became a professional, Cus sat me down and he said, "Now, you sure? Let me understand. Let me explain this to you. I don't have a gun to your head. You want to do this? You want to do this?" He had to explain this. This is for now. Now you're the boss, and you're gonna have this. But I was just a kid. I didn't want to hear that stuff. The reason why he had a contract, because he figured somebody would probably offer me money and steal me away. But this is my family. I didn't understand. I just wanted to be with them and live with them. I didn't know anything about no money. I didn't care about no money. I was a glory junkie. I wanted glory and fame. And when people look up at me, because I had such a low self-esteem. And even to this day, if things don't go too well, I'll think about hurting myself. You know, so that's the mental illness that I carry with me. That I can light up a room. I have good chemistry. I'm charismatic, but then I'm dark, as the darkest can be.
You've also got an intellect, and people have told you that. In fact, here's a listener who writes on our website. Irish featherweight Barry McGuigan said, "Barry, why am I a boxer? I can't sing. I can't tell stories. I'm glad you're telling stories, Mike." So, I mean, you've got a lot of stories to tell. That's what this whole show is about.
I like to disagree with Barry McGuigan. He can tell stories. His father was a legendary storyteller, so I know he can tell stories.
Haven't you also become an expert on boxing? I mean, kind of
amateur expert? As a child, it was my passion. I learned everything about everybody. Because in this state right here, gentleman Jim Corbett is from San Francisco.
That's right.
Abe Attell is from San Francisco. You know, a lot of great fighters, legendary fighters from San Francisco.
Mike Tyson, The Undisputed Truth, a rare personal look inside his life and mind, one of the most feared men ever to wear the heavyweight crown. It has limited engagement at the SHN Orpheum, 3 performances only. And you want to read these letters again to where they can get tickets as well as the phone numbers?
Yeah, right here. You can get tickets for right here, shnsf.com, or you can call 888-746-1799.
There may be a career as a broadcaster in this for you, too.
I like that one, 1799. Yeah. That sounds like I'm selling something.
Here's Mike, who says, I watched all of Mike's fights. I had a descrambler. The atmosphere at those fights was absolutely electric. Thanks for all the great fights, Mike. I never stopped rooting for you.
Thank you.
And Lee says, will you appear in the next Hangover 4 movie? We're getting into the real heavy questions now.
Hey, I don't know. I'm just very grateful I was in the two that they had. And I'm just very, that's what I'm trying to convey is gratitude. I'm just very happy I went the direction I'm going now and I didn't go towards the darkness.
Stay on it, Mike. And Kev asks, do you do any charity work?
Yes, I have a charity called Mike Tyson Cares, and I also have the Stop Bullying Project. And my Mike Tyson Cares organization, it stresses on giving underprivileged kids a better chance, fighting chance at a better life. And we're very at an infantile stage, so we piggyback on more established organizations. And by doing this, we got school supplies for 7,000 homeless children, medical supplies, and that satisfaction was more than anything.
Congratulations. Experience. You're doing God's work, as they say.
Well, I love to be able to do God's work. God is, he's some deep boots to fill, you know? His work is deep.
A listener wants to know if you have any advice for kids and parents about bullying.
We have to get on it right away. We have to address it right away. We can't wait 3 or 4 days or a week to see the teacher. It has to be right away. Police have to be involved. Parents have to be involved. And we need a program because we have to get kids to start loving and caring for one another and not picking a reason. Because we're not fighting because of race differences. We're fighting because of class differences. We're fighting because we don't have no money. We're not fighting because you're Jewish and this guy is a German. No, we're fighting because we're mad. We're in this situation that we keep the harder we fight, the harder we scrap and climb, the deeper we get.
A lot of it's just aggression, though, don't you think, really?
Well, they don't have hope for a better life. How can we have hope for a better life when we walk downtown San Francisco and we look at all of this luxurious stuff and we can't even get a job working, sweeping the place? So, you know, it's going to be a lot of problems with the future to come because this is the class. This is more, it's more significant. It's more dominant than a race problem or a race class. It's just our classes, there's envious, there's jealousy. Why do they have? I work just as hard as them. Why don't I possess anything? Because I'm not what? Because I can't read or write? Because I'm not educated? Because I'm not in the right white upper class? You know, I'm white too. I'm Jewish. Why can't I? Why do everybody think they're rich and I don't have nothing? That's just, you know, everybody think black people or Spanish people think there's Italian people that think everybody picks on them. There's Jewish person, there's Irish people. We all have chips on our shoulder.
We're talking with heavyweight champion and philosopher Mike Tyson. And let me ask you a question that a lot of people want to hear from you on. And that is, and this is, you know, a profound question. I know it comes up in your show. The loss of a child. I mean, a terrible, grievous, it's probably the worst thing you've ever experienced in your life, isn't it?
And, you know, I just don't know what to do. What do I do? I don't know. I don't know. You have to suck it up. You know, I can't be profound about it. There's nothing profound about it. It's a loss that you have to accept that you don't. You just don't. But you have to. If you don't, you have to build you have to dig a grave for yourself, too.
Very well said. Rich writes, Mike, you are the most amazing heavyweight champion ever. The way you are able to talk about your past is unparalleled in the boxing world. And Mike, they could never handle you. You were too much for the world when you were on top of the boxing world, and now you are on top again just by being yourself. Stay strong and never forget where your power lies within.
I never think of myself as being comeback or being strong. I think of myself as being stable. I don't look at success as making a comeback and getting money. I look at success as staying out of prison. Not giving my wife a venereal disease.
But you know, you spoke before about your low self-esteem, and to a great extent, that continues to be the main driver in many ways, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. You said you were a glory hound because probably of that low self-esteem.
No doubt about it. Only thing that exalts me into, I don't know, a orbit, a high status of success is my shame. Mm-hmm. You know, shame is an awesome motivator.
And embarrassment and humiliation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's all I'm made of. I'm part of that energy. You know, nothing, I don't know, jealousy, enviousness. I never had those feelings until I met Cuss. And then you put them with being low self-esteem. Now you got a low self-esteem and a big ego now. When you put those jealousy and enviness with my low self-esteem, I said, I don't want to be jealous. I'm better than him. I'm just as good as him.
You're on the extremes, polarities all the time, really.
All the time.
You?
Never been in the middle. Never. I used to live my life. Either I got everything, else I have nothing.
You want to be in the middle? Is it maybe a comfortable, yes, calm place you'd like to be?
I want to work in that direction.
Hey, you're doing it, aren't you?
I'm working on it, and I have to think. It has a lot. It takes my wife, my friends. It takes a lot of people. It takes a lot of people to help me stay in that common ground of stability.
Are you staying solvent? You bringing in the bacon, so to speak, these days? Because I know a struggle. There was a financial struggle for you, despite all the money you made.
Listen, I'm just very grateful. I don't think I'll ever be wealthy again like I was before. Maybe I will, but I like to think that I won't. But this has been good. All that money before, I couldn't get anything done. You know, I can't get nothing done. I can't even pay a bill with all that money. I mean, it's living too hard. Right now, I'm establishing so much. I'm establishing money for my future. I'm establishing money for my bills, my taxes. And I've never been in this state of organization before, if I should say. And
feels good?
It feels awesome. It feels like a whole person. You know, knowing where things at, not knowing where things at. You just know this is where it is, and you're with somebody that's going to hopefully be the last person you see. When each of you die, one of you will be the last person we see.
So how much do you miss fighting?
Not at all, none.
None? Zero?
No. Because I don't have the fighting spirit anymore.
You mean it's gone?
Yeah, for that type of fighting, yeah.
Yeah, but you're fighting on different levels.
I'm fighting this in life, you know, fighting myself. You know what I mean?
It's the biggest fight, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. Trying to win, my moral accomplishments more so than my tangible ones.
You want to be a good man? Is that what you're after?
Excuse me?
You want to be a good man? Is that what you're after?
I want to understand the dynamics of a good man.
Yeah. And
people call me a great man, but I realize all great men are not good men.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I want to, I don't know, I want to do something.
You hear Mike's phone. I think people are afraid to tell him to turn his phone off here.
I'm sorry.
People still afraid of you, are they? You think?
People are afraid of me, especially if they don't know me and I never did anything. It's because they have some psychological or emotional problem within themselves. How could you be mad? How could you be scared of somebody that never did anything to you? You might meet this guy, and this guy might be your soulmate or your best friend. You never know unless you make that courageous step.
Well, let me say you're the first guest we've had on in my 20 years. We just celebrated 20 years in radio, who came on calling me Kraz right away. I like that.
The crest.
Thank you, Mike Tyson. Good
Thank
to have you.
It's really a pleasure being here, sir.
And holds the record again as the youngest boxer to win the WBC, the WBA, and IBF heavyweight titles. Currently stars in his one-man show, Mike Tyson, Undisputed Truth, live on stage, directed by Spike Lee. Three performances tonight through March 2nd, 8 p.m. at the Orpheum Theater. Well, we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. We thank you for being with us this morning. Another hour coming up. We can talk about with Max Boot about guerrilla warfare and the whole history.
H-N-S-F. History of warfare, you said?
He got another plug in there.
History of warfare?
I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.